I will call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that time is currently 10:34 a.m. on Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. And present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Representative Johnson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Kronk, Representative Ortiz, Representative Colomb, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. And this morning, we'll take up two bills from Representative Stapp. The first is House Joint Resolution 2, which is a constitutional amendment on appropriation limits, and House Bill 38 relating to appropriation limits. This is the first hearing on both of these, so we'll introduce them and then come back to them at another meeting. So first up is House Joint Resolution 2, a constitutional amendment on appropriation limits, and I'd like to ask Representative Stapp and his Chief of Staff, Bernard Aito, to please come to the table, place yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. And also available for questions is Rob Carpenter, Deputy Director of Ledge Finance. So with that, welcome to House Finance.
Well, thank you, everybody, for allowing me to present this bill to my fellow Finance Committee members. For the record, my name is Will Stapp. I represent East Fairbanks in House District 32, and this is my Chief of Staff, Bernard Aoto. Bernard, can you go ahead and put yourself on the record?
For the record, Bernard Aoto, Chief of Staff to Representative Stapp.
And today we are going to be talking about a couple of proposals we have before the committee. First, obviously, is HJR 2. The second will be HB 38. It's a statutory and constitutional revised appropriation limit. So I have a slide deck prepared that my wonderful Chief of Staff will present to the folks of the Finance Committee. I'd be happy to entertain any questions. But first, with your permission, Co-Chair Foster, I'd like to give a brief introduction of the concept of HJR 2.
Okay, sounds good.
So, again, for the record, my name is Representative Will Stapp. So HJR 2 is a revised appropriation limit. So for those folks who may not be aware, the state of Alaska has had a constitutional appropriation limit and statutory appropriation limit in effect since 1982. My argument behind the nucleus of the need for the revised appropriation limit would be in effect that at the time of the in place, the current limit has effectively not served as an effective appropriation limit since its inception, mainly because of the nature behind existing spending cap, as well as during that period of time in state history, we had not gotten used to what we would be calling the boom and bust cycle of Alaska's economy driven by high and low oil prices. So some of the nucleus behind this idea is to look at a stabilizing metric that smooths out the high revenue years and insulates the state from the downward pressure by applying a five-year rolling average to the state's gross domestic product. So we can better plan for the future and ensure that every member of our state, both not only in our private sector economy, which is driven by a gross domestic product, and our public sector folks, have the stability that they have been requesting for in order to achieve long-term investment in our state. So I'm going to go ahead and turn that over to my Chief of Staff, Bernard Aoto, to kind of go through the slide deck and then get into the nuts and bolts of HJR 2.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Johnson, and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Bernard Aoto, Chief of Staff to Representative Stapp. So we're going to be going over a presentation. First, we're going to go over the history of the current constitutional appropriations limit. So the current constitutional appropriations limit was established in 1982 under Article 9, Section 16 of the Alaska State Constitution. It's outlined verbatim on the slide before you, and it's also in your packets. The main, most important takeaways from the current appropriations limit is the use of the term for a fiscal year. This term will be important when we cover the statutory limit later on in this meeting. Also important to note is the metric that's used to calculate the cap. It's a population and inflation model that's tied to the anchor of $2.5 billion. At a set date of July 1st, 1981. Under Section 16, there are a list of exceptions, which include the permanent fund dividend, appropriations for revenue bond proceeds, and appropriations required to pay principal and interest on general obligations or general obligation or GO bonds, and appropriations from non-state sources for specific purposes. This includes things like federal receipts and grants or revenues from public enterprises or corporations of the state that issue revenue bonds. There's also a different section that includes additional exceptions, which include appropriations to the Alaska Permanent Fund, appropriations for capital projects through bond proceeds that have been signed by the governor and approved by the voters of Alaska. And it also set a list of additional requirements for such capital projects. The other thing that's included in that second list of exceptions is appropriations made to meet a state of disaster as declared by the governor and as prescribed by law.
Mr. Bernard, how do I say the last name again?
Otto, Mr. Chairman.
Otto, thank you. So when I look at that, what's currently in writing is it shall not exceed $2.5 billion, which that seems pretty straightforward, but then it says by more than the cumulative change. I guess what would be an example of what that might look like today? Like, I assume that today, that doesn't mean that that's the limit's $2.5 billion. It's just trying to figure out what that means.
To the chair, so when calculating population and inflation calculations for a spending cap, there needs to be some sort of anchor that it's tied to. In this case, the anchor is the $2.5 billion, and the cumulative change is in population and inflation. So as you can see later on, it says it describes the cumulative change would be derived from the federal indices as prescribed by law, and then it goes on to say in population and inflation. So it takes the change in population and then the consumer price index for Anchorage.
Okay. So I think an easy way to think about that is just the inflation adjusted number. And do we know what that number would be today?
Yeah, through the chair to Co-Chair Foster. We're going to have that visualization later on our slide deck that's going to kind of put up on for the committee members' purview all the kind of differences between the existing cap and what our proposal is.
Great. Thank you very much. And just also want to recognize Co-Chair Representative Foster Edgman here this morning as well. So with that, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what HJR 2 is proposing to do will be to change the metric by which the appropriations limit will be calculated and instead use a model based on real gross domestic product or real GDP. As some of you may already know, standard GDP is calculated using a variety of different economic factors, such as consumer spending, business spending, net imports, net exports, along with government spending. What real GDP does is it takes the government spending out of the equation and it adjusts for inflation. The proposal would use the trailing average of real GDP over the five previous calendar years from the current fiscal year and take a percentage of that total, which would serve as the appropriations limit. In the case of HJR 2, it would be 13% of that number. It will be reflected later on in the slide deck. If this proposal had been in place before fiscal year 24, that would equal to about $5.8 billion. This percentage represents a tighter limit in relation to current levels of government spending. And although there are other outside factors that could affect the state's economy and revenue sources, this proposal would allow for stable and predictable budgeting because the governor and the legislature would come up with a set amount of a set appropriations limit based on real data from GDP calculations over the five previous calendar years.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. And when you say real GDP, are you talking about calculated by the federal government GDP, or is there a agency within, or is there a body within the state of Alaska that measures GDP within the state of Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz. So the way that it's outlined in the bill, it's calculated by a state government agency as prescribed by law. The data that we usually use to calculate our GDP is through the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis, the U.S. Chamber, U.S. Department of Commerce.
So to summarize, it's a measurement then of GDP at the national level.
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, yes and no. So the national calculation for GDP uses a national CPI or consumer price index for Alaska, there's a specific Anchorage CPI that's used to calculate Alaska's GDP.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Galvin?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So as you walk through these slides, I really appreciate this and hope that you will also help to appreciate and help me to understand how you're looking at not only the GDP but also the population changes and how that relates. Because when I think about public services such as education, for example, what comes to my mind is we may reduce in population in the valley and have Willow and these smaller communities with fewer students, but we still have to get buses out to them. And so to me, trying to make sure that we incorporate these public services that have to happen in smaller areas, even if they shrink more, my understanding is the particular services that we've agreed to in the Constitution still have to happen. So if you could help me appreciate that as we're walking through these, because I really do appreciate the intent here of making sure we're looking after not overspending in times when we're doing well with the price of oil. Oh, thank you.
through the chair, Representative Galvin, so just clarification, can you a little specificity in the question, I guess, so I can elaborate?
Sure. Thank you. So the question is, in this slide and throughout, would you be specific about how we're going to be making spending cap decisions related to population size when we still have to deliver certain services, even if the population shrinks? Is that specific enough?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin, right? So the fundamental metric of GDP, I mean, typically I would say it's fair to say that as population increases, so does GDP in general. Obviously, our state has had a lot of out-migration in recent years, and we've had negative GDP growth for relative years. So my argument would be when it comes to the cap, we want to make sure that the cap is effectively not a backdoor draconian cut, if that makes sense. So we want to ensure that we can apply reasonable and stable limits on our appropriation, but we don't want to have a metric that's so tight and there's not a lot of maneuver to be able to facilitate those types of changes. Because ultimately, what the objective behind HDR2 and the subsequent bill is to incentivize private sector diversification and growth. I usually tell folks I fundamentally believe that in a healthy economy, there are two economies. There's a public sector economy and a private sector economy. In every healthy economy you look throughout the world, the private sector economy always sits upon the shoulders of a robust, the public sector economy always sits upon the robust of a private sector economy that's diversified, that has good growth-based indicators, and can support the overarching needs of the effective population, irrespective of marginal changes in size. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Representative Hammond, and then Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. I don't know if you have to, I am curious how real GDP takes into account sort of the uniqueness in Alaska in our oil industry, where it's, you know, for much of the oil industry in Alaska, it's public land. It's contractors we've hired, it's not state agencies, but it's an industry working at our legal arrangement for our benefit. Yet, so I'm ignoring private land holding oil development, only focused on state operations in Prudhoe Bay, et cetera, or federal. How is that measured in GDP? Because it's not government agencies. Is it measured as part of the private sector? You know, we're fairly unique in that in Alaska, that so much of our resource development is state-owned but not state agency-produced, and looking to make sure we're measuring that accurately, because I don't think that the federal GDP actually accurately reflects that. But I'm wondering if you've taken that into account.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, so with standard GDP calculations, they do factor in things like business spending, private sector spending, imports and exports, so that would include the oil industry. So it's baked into the state's standard GDP. The main difference between standard GDP and real GDP is that it just takes out the government spending and it adjusts for the inflation. That's the main difference between standard calculation of GDP and real GDP. And the data that the federal government gets as far as Alaska's GDP is given from state agencies.
Thank you. My view is going to be that's a flaw in the calculation, Mr. Chairman, as how we do it, because although it's not a government agency, let's just say we didn't fund DNR permitting because too big of a government spend, that's literally going to shut down our contractor services. But I want to make sure that when we're setting a limit that it accurately reflects, and I don't think in most GDP calculations would have looked at Alaska compared to the nation. It's one of the elements that it doesn't jive because it's our oil, it's our contractor, and setting a limit puts us in a precarious situation to not actually operate as the owner state of those resources. But it doesn't have to be addressed in this slide. It's just one of my concerns whenever GDP gets talked about.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Foster. Through the chair to Representative Hannon. So a lot of that, so the example you brought up, I think with DNR is actually a really good one. So again, private sector performance is being measured, and the facilitation of commerce is a big aspect of that. So when planners and government agencies take steps to facilitate private sector commerce, that's actually going to be captured in outputs through a GDP calculation. So you might not see them on the front end, but you'll see them downstream when you look at consumption-based spending and investment and that type of stuff in that type of sector of the economy.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Perhaps this question is a little, it's kind of based on what Representative Hannon was just asking about, but it comes at it from a little different angle. Your statement about how public sector GDP or the growth of the public sector sits on the shoulders of private sector growth, that's standard, you know, kind of like economic reasoning. However, I think in the state of Alaska, it's a little different because there's no other than the some tax revenue that comes in from corporate taxes, there's no direct link between private sector economic growth or decline and revenue for the state because we don't have those state income taxes, et cetera, that so many other economies or state economies are based on. So I think there's a flaw in the sense that, yeah, standard theory is public sector does sit on the shoulders of private sector. But in our state, where we don't have a lot of private sector taxes, there's no real direct link between revenue spendable based on economic growth of the private sector and that going to the state, which is ultimately what we're talking about when we talk about our budget. It's our ability to appropriate our revenue that we have. So that's where I have a problem with that.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Ortiz. Actually, thank you for the question. So that's actually one of the big kind of thoughts behind HDR2, right? So the reason behind using a private sector performance-based metric is it does actually start to create that tie that the state of Alaska, as you mentioned, doesn't actually really have. It gives buy-in from not only the private sector to be advocately involved in their decision-making process when they don't currently pay any type of large fraud-based tax to the community. It also, in my opinion, incentivizes us and this body and the other body to look at making decisions that are geared toward the performance of the private sector economy in the state, which most Alaskans reside under. So to follow up on the point that you just made earlier, Representative Ortiz, I would say that in the event that you ever wanted to create some sort of tie in the form of a broad-based tax in the future, it would be incredibly beneficial for the members, not only this committee, but the bodies of the legislature to start start thinking about how do you grow and incentivize a robust development of that private sector base in the event you are to apply those things, because it's much better to have a healthy and robust private sector economy that has a tie with the outcome in the in state governance in the event that you need to imply those types of revenue measures at a later date.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Representative Josephson, is it on this
yes.
issue, Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, so Representative Stepp, you think it's the state's obligation to foster economic development and not the private sector's own obligation to look out for its own needs? Is that your philosophical approach?
Now, through the chair to Representative Josephson, I don't think I would phrase it that way. I would say that the state certainly has a role in facilitating commerce, right? I mean, that's clear not only at the state level, but at the federal level. And I think when we talk about effective policies and appropriation limits, those are good concepts so that we can look for ways that the public sector can work with the private sector to develop a future that benefits all of Alaskans. So I wouldn't say it's the state's responsibility to grow the economy. That's really not my philosophy. But I certainly would say that the state can be an active role and even a benefit in doing that.
Follow up?
You know, maybe if I can just sure. stick with my folks I have in line here. Representative Johnson and then Josephson. And
oh, I didn't know that. It was. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. I just have a really just a kind of a quick question, and I'm not sure if you're prepared to answer it exactly, but we heard this bill, or Representative, now Senator Kaufman had this bill last session, I believe, and we heard this bill, and my understanding that there was this bill is similar, but maybe there's some changes to the GDP. And I was just wondering, I don't know if you're prepared to do this, but if I don't expect you to be familiar with someone else's bill necessarily, but then you may be since you have a companion bill in the Senate and so in the other body. So anyway, if you would, it would be helpful to for me to get a little shortcut into how to look at this.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Through the Chair to Co-Chair Johnson. So yeah, the effective difference between the two versions of the bill right now is the HCR 2 before you was the constitutional spending limit GDP calculation, as well as when we talk about HB 38. Those were amended down in the previous Committee of Referral, House Ways and Means, and the Senate version, when it was introduced, it was amended up. So there's a gap between the two. The bill in this body and the other body in terms of what percentage that we're applying for the appropriation limit, if that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
And then, Representative Josephson and then Galvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't realize I had jumped the queue. Through the chair, Representative Stepp, I think you've sort of touched on this, that the differences in the bill versions. But the 13%, I assume that that's selected here, because it equates to $5.8 billion, and that's sort of where the world we're in now. Is that, and I can't remember whether that includes capital or not, but at any rate, is that, really what I'm asking is why not 14% or why not 11%?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Josephson, the previous iteration of the bill did actually have a higher percentage limit, and then that was amended down in the previous committee of referral at the purview of that committee.
Okay.
Representative Galvin?
So it seems as though the premise of this particular proposal is that we have the right level of funding currently, and I know that the House operating budget last month passed a budget that was, I believe, a little more than $100 million more than the cap that you're this is proposing. And I guess my question is, what if knowing that that's kind of where we're at with this bill, and let's say we want to preserve this level of funding going forward and avoid future legislators from overspending. But I guess my question is, what if that future legislature discovers that we've been woefully underfunding a critical sector of our economy? I'm, of course, reminded of the current realization that we have underfunded education for a decade with a significant need to catch up. You know, how would a need to catch up on funding be handled if we adapt a spending cap?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin. So to the first point, the appropriations in the House passed do not actually exceed the constitutional spending limit, HDR2. They do exceed the statutory spending limit, which is in HB 38, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
The second aspect is, I would say, with the concept of the bill, the concept behind the constitutional amendment and subsequent HB 38 is to create stability in the state. As far as looking at how tight that percent should be,
mm-hmm.
and it's not my intent as the bill sponsor to, let's say, backdoor, let's call them draconian cuts to, say, operating or capital budgets. It's to apply a metric that is consistent, it's measurable, it will change with different inputs and outputs over time to bring long-term stability. So I would certainly entertain the topics and even amendments to that, if that's something that you'd be interested in, if you felt like this bill didn't achieve that objective, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stat, no further questions. Please proceed.
For the record, Bernard Alodo. So the bill before you would also maintain many of the exceptions to the appropriations limit under the current constitution. Exceptions listed under the current constitutional appropriations limit include the permanent fund dividend. It would add additional exceptions to GO bond proceeds and principal interest on revenue bonds. It would also include an exception for appropriations to a state account that requires a subsequent appropriation. Examples of this include the constitutional budget reserve and statutory budget reserve. It also moves the separate exceptions that were in the current under the current section 16. They would put them all together. These would include the appropriations to the permanent fund dividend, appropriations to meet a state of disaster under as declared by the governor, and others that are automatically exempt from the appropriations limit. What would be subject to the appropriations limit are all operating expenditures, all capital expenditures, and things such as payments for retirement benefits.
Representative Hannon in the Northeast.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Rep. Stapp, can you tell me why you chose the permanent fund dividends as being an exception to the limit when there are constitutionally mandated spendings, education, public safety, that are being subjected to the limit?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannon. Yeah, thanks for the question. So I would fundamentally argue that the permanent fund dividend is it's the largest expenditure that the state has, and two, it's an issue that I believe needs to be handled in and of itself, if that makes sense. So it's my kind of preference that you can have an effective appropriation limit and you can separate that from a different issue that would be considered the amount of the permanent fund dividend and the historic formula and that type of nature. So that's basically how I would answer that, is I think it should be a separate conversation outside of this current appropriation limit.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz and then Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, my question was fundamentally the same as Representative Hannon's. However, under the UGF capital expenditures, quote, some exceptions, can you kind of review what those exceptions would be?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, so these would be exceptions that we, in regards to GO bonds or revenue bonds that are approved by the voters, those were kept as any sort of capital projects in which the voters of Alaska decide are important enough to be approved would be an exception to the limit. Also, any money that's given from the federal government since it's given to from a non-state agency, is also an exception. So any money that's given to a capital project from the federal government would be an exception to the appropriation limit.
So as a quick follow-up, so what about the required match to meet that federal, those federal monies that come to the state? Would those be part of the limit or not?
So the through the chair to Representative Ortiz, so the state match would be subject to the limit, but the federal receipts that come from that would not be.
Okay.
And if I could, as an example, if the UGF appropriated from the state would be something like $1 million and the federal match is like $12 million, the $1 million from the state would be subject to the cap,
right,
and the $12 million from the federal government would not.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, on the subject of the PFD, my sense of it is that it creates, along with the oil price variation, the greatest instability. And I think what I hear repeatedly from chambers of commerce and from the most affluent people in the state is that often those two groups, chambers and the most affluent people, don't want supersized dividends because they view that as necessarily resulting in growth and taxation. So that is what I hear among, they have other issues too, workforce development, labor unions are a concern to them for sure, but that's often in the flyers they hand me and they hand all of us, they want PFD reform because that's the instability they fear is, for example, the governor in 2019 wanted to pay everyone about $10,000. It was somewhere in the range of $6 billion. That created, in their view, instability. So I guess I'm following up on Representative Hannon's concerns about that. Can you respond to my thought?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair to Representative Josephson. Yeah, I would say you kind of highlighted another reason why the dividend is not in the current version of this bill, HDR 11, mainly because as it's worked in previous years, it's very arbitrary as far as the appropriation. There's a lot of folks who will have different variations of different amounts. So, again, my argument is going to be that type of issue should be settled separately because there's a big variation between a $10,000 dividend and a $1,200 dividend, and if you were to try to model that within a spending cap without having agreement from members of this body and the other body, that would be a very difficult thing to model into an appropriation limit. So I would just go back to the fact that I think that issue is rightly deserving of a separation between this bill.
Representative Ortiz and then Galvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. The other question I have is when we talk about the operating expenditures, the capital expenditures, we're talking about the budget. Are we also, would that include then any supplementals? In other words, if the governor went forward and recognized that we needed supplemental, would he be limited to that supplemental to keep it under that cap, or would the supplemental not be included?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, the supplemental would be included under the cap if it falls under, unless it falls under any of the exceptions listed out.
Thank you.
Representative Gelman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I'm looking back one slide and I'm just thinking about the calculations that we're making based on, frankly, I'm wondering if we're giving a little bit too much power to oil companies. Saudi Arabia and Texas, other outside entities who are deeply affecting our economy, right? But they can kind of, with the drop of a hat, as we know, it's very volatile, change up how we evaluate Alaska's economy very quickly. And so my first question is that, are we doing that? Are we setting ourselves in that way up to, you know, give too much power there? And secondly, I just don't want to hamstring our government at a time where Alaska is making decisions around getting out of the recession that we're in. We want to see more cranes. We want to see that Alaskans are in the great jobs. We know we need to make some investments to get ourselves there. And my concern is, are we tying ourselves too much to some entities that we don't have control over as we make some decisions like this?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin. So I don't think I would kind of say that we would be ceding a lot of power to oil companies. I would say the biggest problem that you would probably have in the event that you have that type of incident happen would be the state would have a massive revenue shortage, right? So you probably wouldn't be worried about a spending limit because you wouldn't have any available revenue to even get close to it. So if that makes sense.
I appreciate what you're saying with regard to immediate revenue, the volatility of that up and down, but I'm also thinking through if we measure our on a down rate where we are and then decide that all of these other funds that we have shouldn't be spent because of that. So I'm not sure if this is the stabilizer that we're looking for. It depends on how we're evaluating this, but if we're giving a whole lot of power to outside entities who do control on that particular measurement, then it becomes critical, I think, for us to evaluate it in a way that maybe doesn't put Texas and Saudi in so much control of those decisions.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, it's certainly true that the oil and gas industry makes up a large portion of Alaska's GDP. So keep in mind that the bill before us in HDR 2 takes a five-year rolling average of the state economic performance. So if the economy grows over time, of course, those limits would increase. And if the economy shrinks over time, those limits would increase. But they're averaged out. And I think that when you look at lots of different historic things that we do in the state that take averages into account, you'll find that they're designed in a way that mitigates the risk of the state between highs and lows. So, for example, that's the whole purpose behind using a five-year trailing average GDP.
Thank you. Quick follow-up. I appreciate that. I do think that does matter to some extent. I also think that we can't, in a sliding rolling average, we can't necessarily cut ourselves out of, you know, of a real recession. And so I just want to be mindful of that as that decision is being made. Thank you.
And before I go to the next question, just want to give the committee a heads up. We had set aside 2 hours for this hearing. But it is that time of year. A last-minute Senate meeting was scheduled with the co-chairs. So we'll be adjourning in about 20 minutes. So they'll give us about an hour, but we will come back to this hearing hopefully soon. So with that, I've got Representative Hannon and then Representative Cologne. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Rep. Stapp, Mr. Otto, I'm curious about the subject to limit payments for retirement benefits and whether... you know, I happen to be a retiree, and I'm just trying to visualize whether if Kronk's got too much money coming in from his retirement or if it's me or if it's the next teacher or if we're looking at, contracts are made for retirees. Are we looking at D.C. and the draw out of people who've put in D.C. and maybe have stayed with us longer than 5 years and if they all exited at once or literally... Yeah, you know, just not paying people 1 year because it reached the cap, and so you're going to take a bigger chunk next year, or what the point was and what the data is that you looked at come to that conclusion that it should be limited.
Through the chair to Representative Hannum. So appropriations to capitalize state retirement accounts are outside the cap. We have a constitutional obligation to effectively fund retirements. We do make payments to the retirement system. You know, that's part of our annual appropriation. So that would just be considered to fall under all UGF spending. In the event that we had an issue regarding, you know, let's say the funds being underwater and not being able to make those, that would require additional capitalization that this body has had to do in previous years, those types of appropriation wouldn't fall under. But as far as what we do every year, as far as making the payments, that's just considered standard operational spending. So you wouldn't have a situation in which you would basically, it's called create a liquidity crisis where you couldn't fund your retirement obligations, if that makes sense.
Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So I was wondering, so I'm looking at this, if you hit the limit and there's still revenue there, let's say we're awash with money, so that would technically have to go into savings. Is that, and if that's the case, so we're incentivizing savings, how does that affect private sector investment and interest in the state?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Cole, that's a good question, right? So effectively, again, the concept behind the cap is to smooth out the kind of boom and bust economy that the state has in terms of how we appropriate revenue. So it doesn't necessarily have to go into savings. Like, obviously, we currently owe the Constitutional Budget Reserve billions of dollars. So in the event that you had an excess, you could look to repay that. You could also appropriate it under the current way the bill operates. You could appropriate larger PFD checks. You could appropriate money direct to the permanent fund corporation itself to put aside money for future generations. You could capitalize SOEs, i.e. state-owned enterprises. So there's lots of ways that you could take money that would be subject to excess of the cap and effectively save it or capitalize something. My opinion on that is that's generally a good thing because it doesn't really matter what those options that this body chooses to pursue. They all have the emphasis behind, again, a long-term vision for the betterment of the residents of the state of Alaska. So,
I have a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So in regards to retirement benefits, do you think that the spending cap would incentivize making those payments more steady instead of these big block payments that, you know, not dealing with our balance, but paying more consistently, making sure we're under the cap?
Yeah, that would, through the chair to Representative Cologne. Yeah, that's another aspect that I hadn't considered. You could use that to, let's say, right-size your capitalization of a retirement fund in the event that it was underfunded, as our pension programs often are in our state's history. And I don't foresee any, I mean, that would be, again, subject to the will of the appropriating body, how you would use that funds.
Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
For the record, Bernard Auto. So the next slide has raw data that we've been provided from Legislative Finance Division. You guys have this in your packet, so I'm not going to go into the specific amounts, but just to explain how the columns are broken up. So on the far left, you have the calendar year, which is separate from the fiscal year, which is later on. You have the Alaska GDP as calculated by the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis, what the government spend of that GDP is, what where it says GDP less government, that is real GDP. And then the Anchorage CPI is the adjustment for inflation. The next thing is the fiscal year. The next five columns are the five trailing years of GDP. This column after that is the average of that 5 years, and then the percentages as listed in HB 38 and HJR 2. Since we're talking about HJR 2, that would be 13%, and that's how we come up with our numbers.
Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, just to clarify, so the 13, so if you look at the very top, that 2777, that's 13% of the real GDP.
That is through the chair to Representative Cologne for fiscal year 04, yes. Okay. And then with the next slide, this is that raw data transferred to a graph. So the red bar, as are represented here, is the appropriation subject to the limit. The orange line is the current constitutional limit in Article 9, Section 16. The green line is our proposal for HGR 2 and where that would be. As of note, as stated earlier, the current fiscal year 24 government budget is under the constitutional cap.
A question, Representative Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at that and trying to remember back to the budgets that are, you know, over and, you know, the different budgets. It would be interesting to see how much that was operating and how much was capital. Because some of those, a number of those years, I think, are capital. We had some high capital, and even FY23 had a little higher capital than some of the past years. Maybe if you bring this forward again, it would be good to see that broken out, possibly, if you could.
Through the chair to co-chair Johnson, in the previous committee of referral, their legislative finance had produced different models that did show the differences in the operating expenditures and capital expenditures. And we can go ahead and follow up with them to get those graphs for you.
Follow up.
So is that a correct assumption then that a lot of those years have to do with the capital budget as far as the additional spend that's above the appropriation limit that's currently proposed?
Through the chair to co-chair Johnson, I'm not too sure specifically. I just know that there were models made. I don't know. We do have Rob Carpenter from Legislative Finance here who may be able to speak on that, but I'm not too sure.
It's a follow-up. It's interesting if you have some knowledge looking back as to why, you know, like some of the really slim years that we didn't have a lot of extra money, there was kind of, but yet it's over and above the cap. So I'm just trying to correlate that in my mind. Thanks.
Okay. Further questions, Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I'm going to get your bill would give us the discretion what to spend on operating and what to spend on capital, correct?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Josephson. So the way I'd like to articulate it is the space between the black line and the green line would, in theory, be the room that you would have for your capital budget. Although, you know, I couldn't restrict the members of the body from appropriating everything that they intended to do that, clearly. But the intent behind the bill is to ensure that you have a capital budget that is consistent. Representative Johnson mentioned the fact that there were years in which the state had a lot of money and we ballooned our not only operating but mainly capital spending, I think it would be fair to say, in some really high revenue years. That had the unintended consequence, in my opinion, of racking up long-term deferred maintenance that there wasn't a consistency in spending to be able to cover, right? So, yes, we had windfall years in oil prices. We did have some years where we had incredible amounts of capital budgeting spend, but we also had the adverse effect of not being able to properly plan for how to knock out the deferred maintenance of the stuff that we built. So,
through the chair, wouldn't a prudent legislator want to know, for example, between 2007 and 2014, what we built? In other words, have a list of every library, every swimming pool, every new school, every improved road, and a list of salaries paid to tradesmen and tradeswomen who constructed those things. Wouldn't we want to know what we would have foregone and what Alaska would have looked like without those expenditures?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think you could certainly make that argument. I don't know if I would, I would say that, I don't know if that's a good measure of being prudent or not. I would certainly say that from my perspective, it's really interesting to know that type of stuff. So,
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. So getting back to the concept of Representative Galvin and, quote, catching up, in the area, because we've had relatively limited capital budgets over the scope of the last several years, does this model allow, would it allow the state to catch up in its, as you say, our building, our increasing deferred maintenance costs that will only get more expensive if we don't address them sooner than later? Does this spending cap allow the potential for us to, quote, catch up in the area of needed capital investment on deferred maintenance?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Ortiz, in my opinion, it would. And you might consider looking at amending some of the percentages that are applied in the caps. I would say, as you can see, between FY, let's say, 07 to FY 14, If we had reduced the amount of spending in those current years, even slightly, the state would have a more effective available revenue to appropriate to ensure that you can have a consistent actual budget, which stabilizes that types of stuff over time. As you referenced earlier, deferred maintenance, in my opinion, doesn't get cheaper over time due to the magic of inflation. And if we had made appropriations in FY 16, 17, 18, 19 to look at that type of backlog, those problems would have been much cheaper to address then than they will be in next year's legislative session, for example.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Aoto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bernard Aoto. The last slide is basically outlining the primary goal of this proposal. Ultimately, HDR 2 is meant to create a long-term fiscal viability and stability through an effective appropriations limit. And it's in part of a long fiscal plan that has been outlined by this body and the other body as well.
Great. Thank you. Maybe if you can explain just the reason and the need for the next bill, which is HB 38, and just the difference between the two bills and why the need for the second bill, and then we'll call it a day and come back to these. Mr. Aoto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the main difference between HJR 2 and HB 38 is the percentage that's taken from it. It uses the same metric and takes 11% instead of 13%. The current statutory limit is outlined in Alaska Statute 3705540B. It sets an appropriation limit of appropriations made in a fiscal year versus for a fiscal year, which presents its own issues. As you can see from the slide deck we provided you, it also includes a metric that is tied to appropriations made from the previous fiscal year plus 5%. And the adjustment of population and inflation. And what this does is, since it includes the appropriations made in the preceding fiscal year, it creates a little bit more instability when it comes to measuring what the appropriations limit would be for the next year. And we do have slides that represent that, but I don't know if we have the time to get to that.
Thank you. I just wanted to maybe get a little bit of an introduction just so folks can start thinking about the next bill. And Representative Staff?
Yeah, through the chair to the members of the committee, I'd also like to point out the fact that the bills have conditional language that tie them together, right? So the statutory spending cap HB 38 and HDR 2 are subject to not only passage of this legislature, but approvals of the voters, because it would be constitutional amendments. So you couldn't pass one without the other, if that makes sense. Or rather, you could pass them, but they wouldn't be effective without the other.
Great, and thank you. And that's an important thing to note, is one is constitutional, which takes a approval of the voters. The other is statutory in state law. And so before we wrap up, any final closing comments?
No, I just wanted to thank the members of the committee through the chair. Starting to hear out this concept today. I appreciated all the wonderful questions that were asked. And, you know, my goal is, again, to ensure a long-term vision for the future of all of Alaskans. And I know that's the purview of the members of this committee's goal as well. So thank you for affording me the opportunity.
Great. Thank you very much. And so we'll set both HDR 2 and HB 38 aside for now. And our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is today at 1:30 p.m., May 2nd. We'll be hearing House Bill 3, which is Gold and Silver Species Legal Tender, and House Bill 83, which is Citizen Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. Both of these bills, we were short on time at their first hearing. We had a short introduction, so we'll be able to jump into those with some more detail today. I will be taking public testimony and questions from the committee, and then setting the amendment deadline for the two bills for this afternoon, so fairly quickly. So with that, if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 11:28 a.m. Thank you.